Elliot Friedman stops by from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot, I opened up the show by saying, look, we're pretty much asking the same questions at the beginning of this week as we were 7 days ago as we kicked off another week about the Vancouver Canucks. Not so much will it happen, but who will it happen to? Is there anything new today, or should we just acknowledge the Vancouver situation is ongoing and move on?
Well, I don't know if you can really move on, Jeff, but you definitely acknowledge it's ongoing. I mean, the tough thing for them is there's no time for moral victories anymore. You know, you could look at that game last night and you could say they played really well and they probably should have won, which is both true, and Fleury almost single-handedly beat them, which is certainly true, but it's tough to sell moral victories there. You know, all I can say is it's really tense around that organization. It absolutely is. I'm four provinces away. I can still sense it. I think there's a real, you know, sometimes when you're in an organization where things are going wrong, and, you know, it's not only in sports, it's just in general life, you can sense that there's going to be changes. You're waiting for something to happen, and you're kind of sitting there looking around and saying, what's going to be the first thing that happens? And I think that's kind of where we are in Vancouver right now. You know, we know that ownership met. They said, we're surprised by this. And if it doesn't change, what are we going to do? What are our next steps? And yeah, you have a loss to Colorado. You have a win over Winnipeg. And now you have the loss to Chicago. And I think everybody there, while they try to dig out of it, and it's not going to be easy to dig out of it, there's also a what's going to be the first thing to happen. And I really sense it there. And the people I speak to kind of have some knowledge there. They sense it too. There's a feeling of something is going to come, when and what. And those are really tough conditions to work under. Really, really tough conditions to work under.
And I would imagine that there are plenty of generous managers out there right now who are trying to help Vancouver out of this really tricky spot, right?
Well, sorry, what exactly do you mean there? Like, what?
I'm sure there's a lot of general managers that are trying to steal players from Vancouver.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we feel awful. What's going on, Jim?
Yeah.
Let us relieve you of this Bo Horvat problem, or let us relieve you of your Connor Garland or whatever, trying to steal good players.
No, there's that is one thing that I absolutely, just in checking around the last few days, that is one thing I absolutely agree with, is that the Canucks are well aware that there are used car salesmen all around the National Hockey League ready to try to take advantage of them, right?
Yeah.
And I had one team that basically said that it was very obvious to them that the Canucks were trying to be careful. They wanted to do something, but you don't want one of those trades that's on your resume for 30 years or is on your tombstone or whatever, right? You don't want one of those deals. And he got the sense that the Canucks were trying to be very careful about it and say, okay, like, we're not doing anything that we're really going to regret. And we know that we're going to regret it when we make the trade because we're trying to dig out of this. I think there is a real attempt to try to avoid that.
Last week we spoke about the Calgary Flames and Andrew Mangiapane specifically, and here we are again talking about the Calgary Flames and Andrew Mangiapane, who now has 15 goals. And some of these, Elliot, are just flat out spectacular. He, like, skating into the Hurricane, coming out the other side and scoring. Like, these are, like, this is a guy that's playing with a confidence that we haven't seen before out of Mangiapane, and he's always been a really good player going back to his junior days with Barrie. 15 goals on the season, tied with Alexander Ovechkin. We talked last week about, listen, this guy's going to get, he's going to get paid flat out. We all know it. But how does he fit into things with the Calgary Flames? I mean, one of the things they talk about is, how do you get this guy up higher into the lineup? Like, how do you bump this guy up to a more significant place? with the Calgary Flames. 15 goals is not easy to do, you know, in 19 games here. Like, how do you find more than 15 minutes a night for Andrew Mangiapane?
Well, what, like, maybe that works, right? Look, the thing is, like, with Sutter, if you're playing well, you're going to play, right?
Yeah.
And, like that's, I think I understand everybody wants to play more. I totally get that, and I understand why people think like that. But, you know, some of the times I do wonder is, do you have intel internally that says this is perfect for that player? I know there are teams that try to do research into that. Now, it doesn't always stay that way. But do you have, like, some, if you start losing, do you say, okay, this guy who's scoring for me is going to play 6 more minutes a night? Like, it happens. I get it. But, you know, right now the Flames have something that's really working. They have an identity. They've bought into it. They protect the house. They forecheck unbelievably well. The amount of chances and plays they're creating off the forecheck, it's fantastic for them. They've all clearly bought into what they're doing. And the other thing I think that Sutter has really done there, and the guy who really stands out to me with this, is Shillington. Like, we always hear all the time, whenever a new coach or a new GM comes in, they say, oh, blank slate. Everybody's got a blank slate.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's actually true, and sometimes it isn't. But, like, I look at Shillington, it's clear that, you know, he went into this with an open mind and said, can you win a job? And he has. And so, when I see a situation there where he's trying to do what it takes purely to get Calgary to win. And, like, look, Mangiapane, he's incredibly important to them. I think the organization knows how good he is. The fans know how good he is. He's almost like the last thing I would worry about, because he's going to play a ton just because they know how good he is. Why screw around with what's winning?
Yeah. Listen, we know as well that Hockey Canada likes to sort of defer to those that have been loyal to their program. And World Championships last time around was difficult for a lot of players. We, of course, because everyone's going through pandemic, and a lot of players didn't want to go and said no. Mangiapane did say yes to Hockey Canada. He goes. He's a tournament MVP. It's one of the more improbable gold medals that you'll see at this tournament. Canada loses a handful of games to kick it. And we all remember the story. And just knowing how loyal Hockey Canada is to players that have stepped up and done things like that for him, and he's having a great season, do you see him on the Olympic team?
I definitely see him in the conversation, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, I do.
Want to get your thoughts as well on...
I don't know if I consider him a shoe-in.
No, neither do I. But he's performed his way into the conversation right now.
Absolutely, he's definitely around there. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Like one of the things I kind of wonder about is, I kind of look at some of the groups there. Like, when you look at how well Hyman's playing with the Oilers, does that make it more likely that he makes the team?
Well, I see. I would look at that and say that is a nod back to when Hockey Canada not only took Sidney Crosby but took Chris Kunitz too.
Kunitz, yeah.
That's what that move would feel like. These two work well together. Why mess with a good thing? That's how I feel about that one. What about you?
I completely agree with you. That's why I think about it even more. Right.
Hey, you know, I mentioned this off the top too. Speaking of the Oilers, we're all talking about McDavid, and for good reason. These are highlight goals. He's, you know, flat out the most impressive player in the NHL. Leon Draisaitl leads the NHL with 35 points. Leon Draisaitl leads the league in goals, finding the back of the net 18 times.
Yep.
Is he getting overshadowed here, even though he's number one in all the categories?
Absolutely he is. You know what Draisaitl's problem is? He doesn't score 1-on-4.
Or 1-on-3. Yeah, I know. He's got to step up his game that way.
He scores more conventionally. It's not as exciting.
Listen, we saw the opening of a new rink, and that's always newsworthy. UBS Arena in New York, we all know what's happened to that team by way of COVID. Six players in protocol right now. Ryan Pulock with the lower body injury. Brock Nelson, LBI as well. Two games in the new rink. Couldn't find the back of the net last night against the Maple Leafs. Lose to the Calgary Flames on Saturday. Still looking for their first win in the new rink, but what did you make of Saturday first game, Islanders Calgary Flames at the UBS Arena?
Well, first of all, it looks fantastic. I had some fans tweeting pictures to me at it. It looks like a great rink. Someone said to me their only real concern about the rink is getting in and out, because I guess the train station isn't ready yet. Mm-hmm. And what would the traffic be like? Although I did have a friend who went to the game last night and he Ubered and he said it was fine. But that, I think, was the only thing they were worried about. It looks terrific. I'm happy for their fans. You know, their fans are obviously very excited about it. But like you, I'm starting to get concerned about the Islanders. I think there definitely is. Look, like, you know me. I was told that when I went into sports media, there would be no math. But there is math. And in the NHL, because of the loser point, it's very hard to catch up when you fall behind. And you know my November 1st stat. From 2006 to 2019, only 9 of 59 teams that were 4 points out on November 1st came back to make the playoffs. And now you have like a pointless weekend like the Islanders do. And it really hurts you. And I know their schedule is 39 at home and I think 28 on the road to end the year, and that really helps them. But, you know, the one thing that concerns me the most about them, Jeff, is that I knew the questions were going to be about their blue line, but I thought the way they played would cover up a lot of those issues. Mm-hmm. And it's not doing that. And that's a problem. Like, their core ability, which was to be a group that's greater than the sum of their parts, it's not working right now. And if that's not working for them, it's a big problem, because it's a huge cornerstone of what they're supposed to be.
And it's not as if to, like, if you look at it from Lou Lamoriello's point of view, it's not as if you can just sort of wait for deadline to try to fix this thing, because that's a really competitive division. And like, there are some teams that are really performing. Now, you may say that some are punching above their weight. You may look at Columbus, for example, and say, okay, are they going to play 600 hockey the rest of the way? Mm-hmm. It's been a great story so far. Can they sustain it? Question marks there. We all knew the Devils would be better. I didn't know they would be flirting with 600, 15, 16 games in, but here we are. Like, there are some you could say, all right, maybe there'll be a little bit of a coming back here for a couple of the teams. But Carolina's a cup contender. Washington, yep. Capitals have been outstanding.
Yep.
The Rangers seem to be, as much as they leak chances, they're fine with Shesterkin just bailing them out and then scoring with under 1 second remaining. Sorry, Buffalo Sabres fans, but what a finish to that game that was. And Philadelphia has improved as well. Like, to your point, it's the jumping over of the teams, even if a couple come back to the pack too. So if you're Lou Lamoriello, you know, you can't even wait and say, like, okay, we've made some moves here, open some cap space, and at deadline, we're going to be players. You kind of have to do something soon if you're going to. No, this is a team now that's lost six games in a row.
Well, I'm really not expecting him to tell me what his plans are. I have to say that. Mm-hmm. But the one thing is, I remember years ago just having a conversation with him about his philosophy. And this was in 2012. You know, when they went to the Stanley Cup, just before they went to the Stanley Cup final against the Kings, I actually met with them before they played the Eastern final against the Rangers. And I remembered that was the year they went out and they got Zdlicky on defense. And he talked about how, I only do those kinds of things when I really think we have a chance to win. So I'm looking at this right now and I'm saying, okay, does he really think he still has a chance to win, number one? Number two, the difference about this year, Jeff, and I'm really starting to learn this a bit more, is that there's a lot of teams, and I don't think we know yet where this attendance picture is going to go, is like all of these leagues are struggling with in-person attendance, and they're still trying to figure out what's the root cause of it. There's a lot of theories, and there's a lot of people who have ideas, but we really don't know yet what it exactly is and where it's going. But the one thing that teams are saying is it's a bad year to have a bad year. Because you're worried about not only your fan base for this year, but who buys tickets for next year. So how much is that going to factor into it? And, you know, the one thing I do wonder with him, though, is you look at his D. Chara is closer to the end than the beginning. Mm-hmm. Green, who just plays the 1,000th game, is closer to the end than the beginning. They do have Dobson, yes. But I wonder, like, the one thing I do wonder, and this is purely me, because God knows he's not going to tell me. I wonder if he tries to see if he can get a young D with term. Now, those are hard to get, and they cost you. But I was thinking about this the other day. If he's doing anything, I wonder if that's what he's looking at.
Would make some sense.
I mean, they've got Pellick signed now.
Yeah, I just don't know what he'd want to surrender to. I just don't know what they'd want to surrender, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, that to me, sometimes that's easier to figure out what you're willing to give up. You know, it takes another trip. But that's the thing I kind of look at them and wonder, like, is that what would they look at, like a younger defenseman or a defenseman under team control for a while? Like that, when I look at the Islanders, that's the kind of thing I could see them doing.
Well, that is interesting, too, because it wasn't that long ago they had, you know, a 26-year-old Devon Taves that they had to let go of and for cap considerations, and now he's playing a top-four role for the Colorado Avalanche. Mm-hmm. A couple of minutes we have left here with you. A couple of things. The big story around the Olympics certainly is Peng Shuai and reports of her safety and certainly whereabouts. But, you know, with that dovetails, increased talks about boycotts, for mm-hmm. example. Athletes are speaking up. Mm-hmm. How do you see this playing out, Elliot?
As the
players all want to go.
Well, I think that a lot of players are going to have to be prepared to be asked that question, right?
Yes.
How do you feel about going under these circumstances? I mean, we heard talk on the weekend, both the Canadian and the U.S. governments talking about the possibility of a political boycott. I mean, we'll see. People talk a big game. We'll see. You know, it's a very legitimate question, though. You know, I was talking about this with someone today that, you know, I still don't think the NHL wants to go. I think the teams are starting to say, look, like, we're not crazy about this 3-week quarantine if you test positive there.
Yep.
And I think internally, among the teams in the league, the opposition is growing. You know, if you heard Sidney Crosby after the game on Saturday in Toronto, he was asked about it.
Yep.
And he said, I'm still preparing to go. And I think a lot of the players who are going to go feel the exact same way as he did. He's not alone on that. But this is a complicated story for a lot of different reasons. And it's just going to – it's not going anywhere. It's going to continue to – be complicated for the next 2 months.
I talked to one athlete who's going, who said to me, I don't want to think about the question right now because of how much I've prepared and how much I've changed my life just for this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But this person said to me, it's a painful internal dialogue knowing what's happening with this tennis player, Peng Shuai, and mm-hmm. the decision to either go or not. This person said mm-hmm. to me, I can't, I'm at, she said, this person said, I'm fighting with it in my own mind.
I believe that. Honest answer.
Because of how much I've invested into this. And this person said to me, it's completely selfish. It's completely selfish. But this is complicated. And this, to your point, this will complicate everyone's decision down the road. Too. They will be asked about it before, and if they go, they will be asked about it after if this Peng Shuai situation doesn't come to some type of resolution where she is indeed safe and able to act and speak on her own volition. Yeah, it doesn't come to a positive resolution. Okay, Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Have an enjoyable day. We'll see what happens in British Columbia as we're day to day.
Aren't we all?
Amen, brother. All right, thanks, Reach.